Hey folks, just a quick heads up that all episodes of the Film Nuts podcast contain heavy spoilers and some strong language. Nothing too crazy, but make sure there's no one with sensitive ears too close by. And if you like what you hear today, please consider becoming a patron of the show. You can find links to that page in the show notes, or you can visit patreon.com/filmnuts. Okay, anyway, please enjoy the show, and thank you so much for listening.
Dr. Harris.
Yes?
Do you concur?
Concur with what, sir?
With what Dr. Ashland just said. Do you concur?
Well, it was a bicycle accident. The boy told us.
So you concur?
I loved the movie way before I knew the true story of Frank Abagnale. I still love the movie. I watch the movie, enjoy it, but in a different way. It hits differently now that I know the truth about Frank Abagnale, but it doesn't take away from the quality of the movie and the acting and the way Steven Spielberg put it together. I mean, it's still one of the best movies, in my opinion.
Hi, I'm Taylor, and welcome back to the Film Nuts Podcast, a show about why we love what we watch. It's been a very nice break. I'm glad to be back talking about more of your favorite films and TV shows. So let's get to it. We all love rooting for the little guy, the underdog. The character that has the odds stacked against them, but ends up succeeding no matter the obstacles in their way. And we love it even more when these stories are based on true events. But what if that inspirational true story turned out to be completely made up? Steven Spielberg's Catch Me If You Can, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, tells the supposedly true story of teenage con artist Frank Abagnale Jr., who successfully poses as a pilot, a doctor, and a lawyer, and manages to cash millions of dollars in bad checks against big corporations. It's a fun cat and mouse caper filled with charm and wit, but my guest today is on a mission to reveal the actual true story of Frank Abagnale Jr. Javier Leyva hosts the Pretend Podcast, a show about real people pretending to be somebody else, people like con artists. Javier's show consistently ranks as one of the top true crime podcasts in the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, and he even has an entire season of the Pretend Podcast dedicated to the actual true story of Frank Abagnale Jr. It's mind-blowing, trust me. But despite Javier unveiling that Catch Me If You Can is almost an entire work of fiction, it's still one of his favorite movies. Obviously, I had to know why. So I invited Javier here to the studio. Javier and I chat about the joys of recording in person, if it's possible to escape through an airplane toilet, and how he actually physically confronted Frank Abagnale Jr. So let's see what all this fuss is about. Here's Javier Leyva talking about Catch Me If You Can on the Film Nuts Podcast.
You know, I'd prefer to have everything in person, but I think it's after the pandemic and shutdown, it really, you know, limited to who you could talk to. And then Zoom kind of exploded and all these video chat services exploded. So I have a knack for hunting people down digitally instead of like in person. But I always pick one or two series a year that I fly out to do the reporting and all that.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's nothing replaces those little moments, little sounds that you get when you're out on the field.
Yeah, and, yeah.
You know, I remember shooting. I went down to Mississippi once to interview this bounty hunter, and he's flipping through all these warrants of people that he has to arrest and stuff like that. And you hear the paper rustling.
Yeah,
you can't replace
like
that.
Like the tactile
Yeah,
sounds.
You don't get that over Zoom, you know?
Yeah, even if you like put it in post, it's just not the same.
No, it's not.
And that was that for Pretend Pod?
Yeah, yeah. And it's great because then you get to know people in a deeper level. You know, like I went to have lunch with him. We recorded. I just set the recorder down there. We're eating waffles. The waitress knows him. You know what I mean? Like those little moments just can't get if you're just doing a remote interview.
So how did this curiosity and fascination for con artists come about for you?
That's a great question because I don't like true crime and I am fascinated with con artists now, but I wasn't always. The quick story is that I created this idea for a podcast called Pretend, and it was really about performing arts and people pretending to be someone else, like ghostwriters and stand-up comedians and okay. you know, people on in the theater. So it was never about con artists. But then I went down to Miami to visit my family for Christmas. Mm. And everybody has a black sheep in the family.
Are you the black sheep?
No. But the black sheep of the family, his name, you know, is my cousin, you know, and he was about to go to federal prison. And we all were curious. We all knew he did bad things, but we didn't know exactly what he did. So I sat down with him and I said, hey, do you mind if I record our conversation? And he just told me for like two, it seemed like 2 hours. Maybe it was more. Wow. He told me everything. From the time he was a small-time crook breaking into cars to breaking into houses to then staging insurance fraud, like accidents, and then to buying a medical clinic, hiring a real doctor, writing opioid prescriptions to drug dealers so they could sell out into the streets. And I was just like, are you kidding me?
And this is your cousin?
Yeah. And I said, okay, I said, this is what the podcast is about. Wow. It's about con artists because he is – such a sharp Cubans and the CHs and the SHs, man. Woo. He's so charming, and he could, you know, when you're around him, he's so friendly and he could just charm the pants out of you. And at the same time, this is a guy that was heading to federal prison. He's okay, by the way, now. He's out of prison. He's an entrepreneur using all that those con artist skills, but like for legitimate business, as far as we know. As far as we know.
Okay. Well, I hope everything stays on the level with
him. Yeah, but he inspired the podcast. And from that moment on, I was like, okay, this is about con artists. And I was like, it's such a flawed idea, too. Like, if I would have really thought about it, I probably would have never done this podcast. Mm-hmm. Because think about it. Once you do one episode about con artists, and the show is called Pretend, everyone you interview is going to know that you're interviewing them because you think they're a con artist.
Yeah.
And I was like, nobody's going to want to come on my show. No one's ever going to. And here we are, like 16 seasons later, and I've talked to a lot of con artists, and I'm always surprised that they come, they want to talk to me. They want to tell their side of the story. And it's fascinating. Fascinating that this thing is still going.
Yeah, well, congrats on 16 seasons. That's really cool and really impressive as someone who's in the middle of his fourth. Like,
I don't know how it happens, man. You just got to keep doing it.
Yeah. Speaking of con, this is wild to me because when I asked you to come on the show and you were so gracious with your time and I asked you what movie you wanted to talk about, your instinctual answer was Catch Me If You Can. Yep. I knew you had done, you got the hard physical copy. I love it.
That's right.
I know you had done a lot of work around the mystery of Frank Abagnale.
Yeah.
So first of all, I'm curious as if this is one of your favorite movies, or is it a movie that has just consumed a large portion of your career life because of your investigation into the real Frank Abagnale?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, I loved the movie way before I knew the true story of Frank Abagnale. I still love the movie. I watched the movie, enjoy it, but in a different way, right? Mm. It hits differently now that I know the truth about Frank Abagnale, but it doesn't take away from the quality of the movie and the acting and the way Steven Spielberg put it together. I mean, it's still one of the best movies, in my opinion.
Quiet down, people! My name is Mr. Abagnale. That's Abagnale, not Abagnale, not Abagnale, but Abagnale. Now, somebody please tell me where you left off in your textbooks. Excuse me, people, if I need to ask again, I'm going to write up the entire class. Take your seats!
And for our audience who maybe doesn't know the truth about Frank Abagnale, I know you've got a whole season of the podcast dedicated to it. Can you boil it down to like two paragraphs of what I actually have?
Well, I wonder if this says based on a true story. I don't know, but it was marketed as a true story. It doesn't say it on the extraordinary true story of a brilliant young master of deception. Well, everyone knows that if it's based on a true story, Hollywood has to fudge it a little bit. They got to like condense characters and consolidate them and then maybe compress a timeline. Some things are true. Some things are maybe not true. But we generally think that most of the story must be true, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not the case with Catch Me If You Can. It is a completely fictional story, okay? And that's because the guy, Frank Abagnale, the real guy, he made up maybe 90% of that story, of his life story. Like, he never did any of the things that he says he did.
Because the movie's based on his autobiography, right?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. It's not like Steven Spielberg saw this guy down the street. No, he wrote in the, you know, early 80s, he wrote an autobiography called Catch Me If You Can, and it tells this wild story of Frank Abagnale posing as a pilot, a doctor, a lawyer, a professor, all while he was, you know, from the age of 16 to 21, and he's playing this game of cat and mouse with the FBI. Eventually, the FBI captures him, throws him in prison, and then they get him out of prison and recruit him, and he starts working for the FBI. Mm-hmm. He claims he wrote $2.5 million in bad checks. Just an amazing story, really. But how then you start thinking about it. How can a 16-year-old pull all this off? And when you start digging in and looking into his story, it turns out that it's, some of it is real, but mm-hmm. most of it is completely made up. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy, an author named Alan Logan, and he wrote this great book about Frank Abagnale's real life story. And it didn't get much traction in the media. Like, they wrote about it a little bit here and there, but this guy did this amazing expose, didn't get a lot of traction. I didn't really believe it at the time. And Alan Logan said, listen, do your own research, try to recreate my research. And everything that I found about Frank Abagnale is publicly available information. You could go right now and get it, request those mm-hmm. documents, and you'll see that the guy made up most of the story.
So he was challenging you to almost like recreate the research that he had done.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was crazy. And so I was like, sure, I'll take you up on your challenge. And so we, you know, I pulled a lot of the same documents that he did. And he shared some with me, but for the smoking gun, I was able to pull myself. Mm. And it was a prison card, that this little yellow piece of paper, mm-hmm. and it says Frank Abagnale, and it has dates on it. And the dates are important because it proves that he was in prison from the age of 16 to 21, in and out of prison, right? Mm-hmm. Which means it's impossible for him to have pulled off the stunts that he claims he did.
Okay.
So then that's interesting, right? But what's even more interesting is what really happened. And that's where the story takes a wild turn, because not only is the story not true, but what he was really up to is just completely bonkers.
What was he? Can you? Yeah, I don't want to like you to recreate your own podcast this podcast, but like, what are some of the things that he was up to?
Well, okay, so let's talk about the things that are true.
Okay,
okay, some of the things that are true. He did pose as a pilot.
Hello.
Hi. Are you deadheading?
What?
Are you my deadhead to Miami?
What? Yes, yes. Yeah, I'm the deadhead. Here you go.
You're a little late, but the jump seat is open.
You know, it's been a while since I've done this. Which one's the jump seat again?
Have a nice flight.
He went and got a pilot costume, not a uniform, a costume, and he would take rides on other planes. So, like, let's say he was Pan Am pilot, and he would go on another airline mm-hmm. jump seat, right? And so then he would get free rides that way. That is true. Okay, we know that. Spoken to some flight attendants that have corroborated that. And we have pictures of young Abagnale dressed as a pilot. Mm-hmm. But here's where the story takes a left turn. He was in prison most of that time, like I said. But every time he would come out of prison, he would get this pilot costume and show up at different places. Okay. One of the places that he showed up was a kid's summer camp in Houston, Texas, right outside of Houston, Texas.
All right.
So this pilot shows up at a kid's summer camp. And he's like, hey, I was furloughed, lost my job. I need some work. Can you guys hire me? And they're like, sure, you could work at the summer camp. We have pictures of Frank Abagnale at the summer camp. And he worked there, and he would drive all the kids around and, you know, this and that. And then he eventually stole a bunch of camera equipment from the summer camp and took off with all this gear. That's, so he's like stealing from a summer camp. That's one thing. At one point, he was in Baton Rouge, gets out of prison, shows up as a pilot, meets this lady named Paula Parks, befriends her. She's a flight attendant. They, you know, they, I guess they go out on a date or something, but nothing ever happens. She takes him home to meet her parents, and he met the parents. Well, Paula Parks, she's flying her all around the country. Guess who shows up at her parents' house while she's not there? Frank Abagnale, dressed like a pilot. The parents take him in. This guy's living at Paula's house. He's eating their food. Mama Parks is washing his dirty clothes. And guess what? He's stealing checks from their checkbook. Man. Yeah, writing checks to himself. And he gets arrested. You know, during that time, he also shows up at a kid's, you know, at a facility for disabled children, working with children. He was always surrounded by kids for some reason. One time he got out of prison, went to work at an orphanage, again, with the whole pilot costume thing. Yeah. So this is a guy with this pattern of playing dress up and showing up where kids are. And then, I mean, if you want to keep peeling back the onion layers, I mean, it turns out that the family tree is really interesting. His brother was a real con artist, but not a flashy con artist like Frank Abagnale. This guy kept it all under wraps until he passed away. He faked his resume, worked as a therapist his entire career without any license. We spoke to his daughter. Frank Abagnale's father was known to have ties to the mafia and had, you know, some shady dealings. I think that was portrayed in the movie a little bit. So there, he's such an interesting character. It's just not the one from the movie.
Going back to the movie though, like, do you remember the first time you saw this?
I don't. You know, I was trying to think of the first time I saw this movie. I don't even remember. It came out like what, in the 90s? You know,
early 2000s.
In the early 2000s, yeah. I don't remember exactly where I've seen it, but I've seen it so many times. It's one of the few movies, you know, that you can watch over and over again and just enjoy all the time. So I don't remember, but it's always been there. It's always been part of my life, right?
So upon your, I guess, frequent revisits of the movie, have you taken something different from it each time? Or also watching it multiple times, have you also been going through the research of finding out who Frank Abagnale really was? And did that change your opinion at all? Or
anything? Yeah. The only thing, I still enjoy the film, but the only thing that bothers me now watching it, I can't help, but it bothers me because I know the real story, is how they portrayed Frank Abagnale's mom, Paulette. In the movie, they portray her as this adulterous woman, wife that, you know, she's selfish.
Ma, is this my driver's license?
That's all there is, two bedrooms. Oh, Frankie, you remember Dad's friend? Jack Barnes? From the club?
Hello.
He came by looking for your father. I was giving him a tour of the apartment.
It's very spacious, Paula.
Dad's at the store.
So, Frank, you're getting to look more like your old man every day. Thanks for the sandwich, Paula.
And that was, from what I could tell, far from the truth. In fact, court records show that, you know, it was probably Frank's dad who was having the affair. But that's just not the way the movie portrayed it. And for me, you know, I don't know. I guess I have a good relationship with my mom. But, like, let's say Steven Spielberg wanted to make a movie about my life, and he portrayed my mom as a, you know, almost like this, like,
in an unflattering light. Yeah.
I would have issues with that. And Frank Abagnale has never spoken out about that. The real guy, he's only spoken out about the way his father was portrayed, but I would take great issue with Steven Spielberg portraying my mom.
Or any director.
And it's just kind of weird, you know, like that's one issue from the movie that I think he would take issue with, but he doesn't.
So you talked about that. You do still enjoy this movie.
Yeah.
Despite knowing kind of the real story, but can you go into more detail about how knowing the real story has affected your enjoyment of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I watch it, and first of all, I think that the fact that Leo looks nothing like Frank Abagnale, it's almost like I don't buy that it's based on a true. Once you know it's not based on a true story, it's a fantastic work of fiction, mm-hmm. right? So it really doesn't affect my enjoyment of the film. And part of the reason is that the Tom Hanks character, he's based off of a real FBI agent, but there was no cat and mouse chase in real life. So that whole, you know, Tom Hanks chasing him around the world and stuff mm-hmm. like that, that never happened.
Hanratty. Carl Hanratty.
Mind if I see some identification?
Sure.
You know, you never can be too careful these days. Well, tough luck, Carl. 5 minutes earlier, you would have landed yourself a pretty good collar.
It's all right. 10 seconds later, and you'd have been shot. Mind if I come downstairs with you? I gotta take a look at this guy.
Sure thing. Just do me a favor and sit tight for a second while I get this evidence downstairs. You know, I don't want some maid walking through here and making the bed. LAPD should be here any sec.
Wait. Your wallet.
You hang on to it for a minute. I trust you.
So to me, it just seems like almost like parallel universes, and they don't like mm. they don't conflict with each other because they're so different, you mm-hmm. know?
I was thinking about that watching this movie. I remember, I think I've only seen it like 2 or 3 times. When it first came out in the theater, I remember really liking it, like enough to be like, oh yeah, that's a good movie. Like yeah. I will watch that movie again. And I rewatched it recently. And yeah, I think because I binged your entire season, season 11 for 10.
Yeah.
And I was very much bothered. I was like, couldn't get out of my head.
It bothered you. Yeah.
Yeah. It bothered yeah. me because, but I think thinking back on it, if they ever did some kind of like re-release of this movie and they just took out based on true events, I would have no issue.
Right.
Like, I think that would be it. Like if I could erase from my mind that this was supposedly based on a true story, I would think it's a fantastic movie. But like art doesn't really exist in a bubble. Like it's influenced by
I think the thing is that, you know, I watched the Freddie Mercury movie or any biopic. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the Bob Marley movie or whatever. It doesn't, or I watched Lincoln mm-hmm. and I don't go back and research. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, was that scene true? Mm-hmm. I'll go back mm-hmm. and Wikipedia it or whatever. I think what bothers me about this movie being based on a true story is that we're celebrating a guy that not only he's not the savvy con artist that we think he is, for the things that I was describing about going back, getting out of prison, going to seek the company of children. I'm not implying that anything wrong was happening there. I'm not implying that at all. Mm-hmm. But this is not a very smart, savvy con artist. This is a guy that stole money from innocent people like Paula Parks' family. He stole money from investors with these investment deals, like doctors and real estate agents that still are old. Tens of thousands of dollars that this guy has not paid. I mean, he could just take the Rolex off of his wrist and pay back some of those loans. Mm-hmm. And the point is, there are real victims still out there mm-hmm. that lost a lot of money because of this guy, and we're like celebrating him. that's probably what you're feeling.
Yeah,
you know? That we're celebrating a guy that's not a hero. You know, yeah. he's not even an anti-hero. He was just he would write bad checks using his real name. Let's talk about that $2.5 million that he supposedly stole. It wasn't $2.5 million. Court records show that it was maybe a little over $1,500. Mm. And he would write checks using his own name. I mean, I'm not a brilliant mastermind criminal, but I would use somebody else's name.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So it's tough to celebrate this guy's life.
So this is more of a very broad question. With this, the facts of this movie being very much fudged, and in your line of podcasting work, you've talked a little bit about this on your podcast, this idea of like post-truth kind of in this mm-hmm. world that we're living in. So how important is it that we as an audience to media, live stream engagements, articles, whatever, how important is it that we question whatever is being presented to us as the truth?
I mean, I think we should always question everything, that mm-hmm. even things that you hear on a podcast, mm-hmm. you should question it, because what we're doing is reliving somebody's memory or recalling somebody's memory. And memory is such a flawed thing to begin with. So, you know, like if we kind of meet back in a month and try to recount what we just did today, it might be very similar, but we might have different angles of it. Mm-hmm. And so you always have to question whether somebody's recollection of something is real. I think the best way as a audience, if Steven Spielberg says that this is true, I think it's up to him to and his team to really make sure it's semi-true. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to put that stamp that it's based on a true story, as a viewer, I think that if you hear something that just sounds too good to be true, just do a little bit of legwork. It actually didn't take that much work to find out the information that Alan Logan and I found out about this. And it turns out that there were journalists way before us that were looking into this. So you could do a newspaper.com search and you're going to find, you know, articles saying that this guy is probably not who he says he is, right? And so, but I think at the end of the day, since memory is flawed, public records speak for themselves. They're like a little capture in a moment in time. And so, you know, if you have real documents to back it up, I think you should trust that.
Such a weird thing to say. Like, it seems so obvious that, like, oh yeah, why don't you like find the core of like what actually happened? And
yeah, but who has time for that, right?
I know. Like we take, you know, we take convenience for granted. Like, much rather any information be presented to us as opposed to us trying to find out the real information. And sometimes when we try to find out the real information on our own, then that information is wrong.
Right. Well, and just like before we started recording, we were talking about the floods in Dubai. Yeah. I started thinking to myself, what if that was like all fake or AI or something? You know what I mean? And I just told you the story. I didn't fact check it. Right. So now I just spread some information. Hey, there might be floods in Dubai. I don't know.
Right, I don't know.
But like, now you're going to go tell somebody else that there's floods in Dubai. And that's how it happens, right? This like this ripple.
That telephone game can kind of get out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think we mean well, but there are some real bad actors out there. I mean, foreign entities, you know, like China, Russia, who are trying to influence our news cycle. Mm-hmm. There are people who are trying to spread misinformation for whatever personal gain that they have. And a lot of us, we're just consuming it, right? And we don't even see it. We don't even know. Mm-hmm. Once we get funneled, we don't even know that we're in the machine, right?
Yeah, and sometimes we end up trusting. We end up being too trusting sometimes of just anything we hear. And we don't, and even if the information is relayed to us in a non, you know, nefarious way, they're just relaying whatever they heard or read or saw. And then that's, you know, the telephone.
But we live in that post-truth world. And so we have to know how to navigate it as consumers, right?
So sorry for the interruption, but I will be brief. I am so grateful that you decided to listen to the Film Nuts podcast today. If you are enjoying what you're hearing, please consider supporting the show on Patreon. With a small monthly amount, you can get access to behind-the-scenes goodies, early access to full episodes, and you can vote on what movie we watch the first Monday of every month on the Nut House Discord. The Nut House itself is free to join and is full of other film and TV lovers, so you'll fit right in. You can check out info on all these things in the show notes. And if all of this sounds like a bit too much, that's totally okay. But if you want to keep up to date on all of our episodes, please be sure and subscribe on your favorite platform of choice. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave a rating and review so we can get in front of other awesome people like yourself. Okay, enough of me rambling. Back to the good stuff.
With all the smack we're talking about Frank Abagnale, do you have a favorite moment or scene from this movie?
Yeah. Oh, man. I love it. Well, first of all, can I tell you that my favorite scene is probably the title sequence?
Oh, so good.
John Williams score. Dun-dun-dun-dun. I love that
such
soundtrack.
Such a great score.
And the animation, I just, for me, it grabbed me right from the beginning. I do love the scenes that were shot at that old airport in New York. The name escapes me, but it's this beautiful architecture and there, you know, Tom Hanks, you know, like, finally, like, kind of catches up to him. And my favorite scene. Hold on. Can we talk about the toilet scene?
Yeah, you can talk about whatever scene you want to.
I love that scene. Yeah, the toilet scene. So the story is Frank Abagnale gets arrested or escapes, right? He escapes to Europe, right? And this part is true. The real Frank Abagnale does go to Europe at one point.
Okay.
All right, but like that part is true, but that's the end of the real story.
Okay.
But in the movie, He gets caught. He gets thrown in prison, and some French prison, and Tom Hanks comes, pulls him out of jail. They're transporting him back to the U.S., you know. They're on the plane, and Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, gets up, and he uses the restroom.
Frank, come on now. Frank?
We're landing in 6 minutes. All of you need to be in your seats.
Frank, open the door. Fastened. Frank!
He sneaks through the airplane toilet and then starts running down the tarmac and right. like escapes into the sunset.
I was in my head. I was racking my brain of like what the inside of a plane looks like in order for that to happen.
Well, according to Frank Abagnale, and we have this, he said this before, that really happened. That wasn't just like Steven Spielberg pulling this out of nowhere. Apparently he really escaped through a toilet. Well, but the problem is that there are people that listen to these claims, people that actually are engineers and know how planes work and stuff like that. Yeah. And they're like, no, it's actually impossible.
For I was going to say, clearly there's got to be something.
And what a nasty little thing to sneak out of. But anyway, so when he started realizing that people were questioning the, you know, whether that was true or not, then he says he didn't escape from a toilet. He escaped from the kitchen galley or something. So the story kind of changed a little bit. So if you asked him today, he did not escape from the toilet. But if you asked him in the 80s, he totally escaped from the toilet.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So yeah, that scene was like, wait, it's not the drain, because that's what it was. So it's like the underneath of the toilet mechanism is somehow open then to the wheel well of a plane. I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't work like that.
Yeah. And I don't know planes. So that's the problem. So I asked this question of our guests. How would you recommend this movie to someone who hasn't seen it? And with all that we've talked about, is there any kind of caveat that you would give when you would recommend
it? Just watch it as if it were a work of fiction and you're going to love this film. I mean, it's a great film, but the problem is that if you had any expectation that it was real, you're going to be sorely disappointed. It is so not real.
So how has it been possible for kind of a vague question, but how has it been possible for con artists to use storytelling as a weapon to like enhance their own lore or legend?
Yeah. I mean, it's, if you could grab somebody with a great story, people love stories. It's like, we're like a moth to a flame, right? Mm. People love a good story. And if you are have enough charisma and you're on the Johnny Carson show and you're like telling the world all these great stories, we want to believe, especially a story like this, where you think that there are no real victims, you know, that this was all innocent crimes, you know, no one really got hurt. You're like, oh, well, then we romanticize it, right? Con artists don't want to ever tell you like that they really hurt people. That would not make great sales, or that, you know, like imagine a Ponzi schemer telling you about all these investments he did wrong. No, a Ponzi schemer is going to tell you about all these great opportunities, these amazing returns. They fill your head up with all this hope. And but they also do the opposite too. Like, con artists could use fear as a way to motivate. They I've noticed this is a common thread with con artists. They disarm you by, let's say, they buy you dinner. They're always the first ones to pick up the check. They give you gifts and stuff like that, because when it's time to ask you for something, for money or whatever, you're like, oh yeah, they're good for it. They bought me dinner, right? Like, they are always picking up the check. They're always giving me gifts. You know what I mean? So they've earned your trust. And so I've noticed that about, like, as a common threat to the people that I cover, at least.
So when you're watching this movie, do you find yourself identify or rooting for anyone as you're watching the movie?
Well, you know, you're this movie, you're rooting for Leonardo DiCaprio, Frank Abagnale. You want him to get away with it. And I think that, I mean, it's the anti-hero stuff, right? Like, we rooted for Walter White in Breaking Bad, Tony Soprano, you know, and don't you get disappointed at the end of the day when you start realizing, okay, so when you're in it, right? Like, when you're watching The Sopranos, and you're so in Tony's gravitational force, right? And then the show ends and you're like, wow, that's the guy that I wanted to win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, isn't that weird? But you have to step away from it for a while. It's almost like the magnetism that a cult leader has, you know, while you're around it, they smother you. And so you don't see the the danger that you're in until like you escape. And then all of a sudden it makes a lot of sense. So I think that, you know, when you're rooting for Frank Abagnale, you're caught up in the story and in the whole glamour of this chase. And then you realize, well, the real guy, why do you think he was posing as a doctor? You know, what was he trying to do? What was he trying to do as an attorney? You know what I mean? Like when you start like realizing these things.
Yeah. And like the weird part about the movie is that he, my recent recollection of watching it a couple of days ago was basically that he was kind of inspired to take on these different roles by watching TV. Like,
well, probably some of that. And then he'll also tell you that, you know, he was so heartbroken by his parents' divorce. You know, he paints this dramatic picture that he's in the courtroom and, you know, they're like, you know, he runs out of this courtroom when his parents get divorced and then he doesn't know where to go. And he immediately, you know, gets the pilot suit and just goes. It's almost like this like crazy fantasy that he's living out this crazy fantasy.
Yeah.
But every superhero needs some sort of motivation, right?
Yeah. Like, that origin story.
Yeah, that origin story. He definitely created it. Now, the funny thing about Frank Abagnale is that the origin story, this folklore that he's created for himself, it has, there's a point when it all starts to happen. That story wasn't always there. Okay. Mm. There was a point in time. Remember when he was at the summer camp, when he was doing all these things at the orphanage, that story didn't exist. There was a point where it was almost like a flip of a switch that this story comes to life. And it's right around the time where he gets married. And so a lot of people think that, what did his wife have something to do with crafting this story? Did a local journalist, because the first time we hear the whole story about the pilot, doctor, lawyer, professor thing was after this article was written by this local journalist. And so it's like, where did this fantasy come from? And it happened very quickly. It wasn't like he slowly added to the story. No, it was just like, one day he's a small-time crook. The next day he's this like brilliant con artist on the Johnny Carson show. It just happened just like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Some good publicity work.
Yeah, it is brilliant. And I actually spoke to one of the women that I think it was his agent or somebody that was trying to get him booked on the Tonight Show. Mm. If she would have never booked him on the Tonight Show, I don't think there would be a Frank Abagnale. I don't think there would be a Catch Me If You Can. Mm. It was like she inadvertently created a monster.
Yeah, but apparently a monster who then got turned into a character we all root for in a movie.
And a Broadway musical.
And I keep forgetting about that. That's wild to me. I think it's like that feels perverse to me.
Yeah, I just saw a posting on a newspaper, like some sort of online magazine. They're looking for the part of Frank Abagnale. They're auditioning for Frank Abagnale's mom.
Oh, wow.
For the musical. And I almost want to tell him, you know, do you want to hear the real story about the mom? Because she's nothing like the way the movie portrays her to be.
That's so wild.
Yeah. It's,
you mentioned earlier, speaking of how the mother is portrayed, you mentioned earlier that you don't want Steven Spielberg to portray your mom in a way,
right?
In this particular way. But I came up with this question. I want to know who would play you in the movie about exposing Frank Abagnale?
Okay. My kids say that I look like Lin-Manuel Miranda or whatever, so we're just going to go with him. And if he's not available, Ray Romano or...
I haven't... Who would play Frank Abagnale?
That's a good one. It would probably be like Seth Rogen or something, you know? Like,
interesting. Okay.
I don't see Leonardo DiCaprio at all playing Frank Abagnale. This movie needs to be made because... This was the real Catch Me If You Can. Like, nobody was chasing him back in the day, but Alan and Logan and I have been chasing this guy for a couple years now.
Oh, I was doing some research before our chat, just on Frank Abagnale, looking up a bunch of stuff. I immediately thought of, if that movie was about right now, like this time of exposing him, I think Henry Winkler could play a really good Frank Abagnale.
Oh, yeah, right, like now. The older Abagnale. Yeah. Oh, I love Henry Winkler. He would make a great Frank Abagnale. Like that would be awesome.
You actually went to confront Frank Abagnale in person, right?
Yeah. You know, I couldn't do this whole series on Frank Abagnale without Frank Abagnale, right? Like, there was a lot of historical documents. So I reached out to him. Actually, I reached out to him at the time, I actually thought that this movie was real. So I reached out to him because
we all did.
Yeah, because I admired the story and I thought he's like the biggest, baddest con artist of all time. And so I reached out to him and he said no. And if he would have said yes, I would have still believed the story. I would have had him on my show and just talked to him.
Right.
And none of this would have happened. But he said no. And that's when I started looking into it. That's when I found Alan Logan. Mm-hmm. And here we are, right? So he said no, but I could not do the series without him, right? So I knew that he was speaking at the MGM in Las Vegas, this huge auditorium. He did this like hour keynote speech. He's a great speaker. But I waited for him outside of the stage, you know, I had a feeling that he would go right, you know? And so I met him out in the hallway and I made sure I had like the biggest, baddest microphone I could find, like a big boom mic. So he could say, Yeah. I like, we're definitely recording this. Right. And so, and you know, I had my camera in my pocket, you know, it looked very unassuming. And I hit him with a softball question. I said, "Hey Frank, your story is so unbelievable. Can you tell me about it?" And he started, you know, giving me his canned answers. And so I knew I didn't have much time. So I was a friendly reporter. Now, second question was a hard one. I said, "Frank, how was it that you were posing as a pilot, doctor, lawyer, professor, if you were in prison the entire time?" And he goes, "Oh, no, I think you got your dates and times wrong." I go, "No, actually, I have your prison records right here." And I pulled it out. And he's like, and that's when like the people around him started realizing that this was not a friendly interview.
Like his like security detail?
No, just like the event organizers and the people, his posse. I don't know who those people were. But anyway, so things start getting tense and he answers my question. He gives me like this BS response. And that, you know, and the whole thing is caught on tape. I put it on YouTube, but yeah, I had to get him. And you know, the funny thing is that my series on Frank Abagnale ended, but my listeners, they're still fired up about this. And when he does speaking gigs, my listeners are confronting him at these different events,
really
asking him like, "Hey, you know, if this is a lie, can you, you know?" And it's amazing because it's like people feel like they've been betrayed, you know, buying this BS story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like finding out, spoilers, like Santa Claus isn't real.
Exactly. And that actually is, you should read my YouTube comments. 90% of my YouTube comments are people saying, "Dude, leave the guy alone. It's a great story. He's amazing." And, you know, he's had a very successful post con artist career or whatever, you know, where he goes around and he says he's a security expert, whether he's done all those things or not, I'm not sure, but he comes across as a very knowledgeable guy in security and fraud. And he's probably dishing out some really useful information, but these companies are hiring him to speak or as a consultant or putting him on his board under the premise that this was real. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, he might be very knowledgeable about security and fraud and stuff like that, but not because he did all these amazing cons. You know, it's not like when you hire a hacker, you know how like governments hire hackers, they're like, "Try to hack into my," because they're talented and they know that. No, they hire this guy because they recognize him from the movie, but he has no,
it's clout,
right?
Yeah.
But he has no real professional background. So whatever. Hey, all power to him, man. If all we want is to set the record straight, correct history, and you go around doing your keynotes, as long as people know that there's a giant asterisk on this film and on your book.
And the movie's still good.
And the movie's
even
still good.
Even if it's not a true story, the movie's still good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Javier, this has been great, man. This has been so much fun. I'm so glad that we connected and I listened to you, the real Catch Me If You Can, and then have you talk about the fake Catch Me If You Can. So this is great.
Oh, dude, it's amazing. I could talk about this topic all day. I'm sure Frank doesn't want me to, but
to me, the greatest con here was convincing us that Frank Abagnale Jr.'s story was real. But stories are such powerful things. An outlandish story about a teenager successfully impersonating a pilot can inspire us to believe we can accomplish anything. A ridiculous tale about a kid getting hired as a supervising physician at a pediatric hospital can make us want to help people. And hearing about someone ripping off a giant corporation by simply cashing bad checks feels vindicating. what we see and what we hear affect us, even if it's bullshit. A huge thanks to Javier for chatting with me today, and a Boeing 707 size thank you to you for listening and watching. Please take a look at the show notes for links to Javier's show, Pretend, and some other goodies that have to do with the real Catch Me If You Can. If you enjoyed the show today, please go ahead and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform of choice. And if you happen to be listening on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave a rating and review. It helps us get noticed by more awesome people like yourself. If you want to help the show grow and get access to some really cool perks, please consider becoming a patron of the Film Nuts podcast. You can check out the links below or visit patreon.com/filmnuts. Our theme this season is brought to us by The Deep End. Our artwork is designed by Madungwa Sipahudi. Our director of production is Keaton Lusk. And all episodes of the Film Nuts podcast are produced and edited by me, Taylor D. Adams. If you want to get in touch, you can email filmnutspodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Film Nuts Podcast. I'm not going to call it X. I'm going to keep calling it Twitter. And don't forget to join the Nuthouse Discord community absolutely free simply by checking out the link in the show notes. Thank you all so, so much for listening today. And until next time, here's hoping none of your checks bounce. People still write checks, right?